Welcome to the Voices of Women Physicians podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Tatiana Resnik, a practicing physician and a certified life coach. You will hear about inspirational journeys and practical tips from amazing women physician experts, as well as effective coaching and steps in your process. Welcome everyone to this episode of Voices of Women Physician podcast. And now I have here our guest, Dr. Basma Ferris. We have a wonderful episode about culinary medicine last week. And this week, we're going to talk about your practice and about PCOS and how nutrition can help.
Thanks for having me back. I loved our conversation last week. So I'm very happy to be having another conversation about what I am really, truly passionate about. And that is caring for people with polycystic ovarian syndrome, which is abbreviated as PCOS.
Thank you so much. It was such a helpful conversation about fun topic about culinary medicine. And if you could briefly introduce yourself, just in case if some of our listeners today didn't have a chance to listen to previous episode yet.
So I am a OBGYN in New York City, and I'm also certified in culinary medicine. I started my healthcare career as a registered dietitian, and I worked for almost 10 years by the time I graduated from medical school. And when I became a physician, I've been trying to seamlessly integrate nutrition into my practice as an OBGYN. So over the years, I've treated many, many people with polycystic ovarian syndrome, as this really is where my two parts of my brain or my two skill sets overlap, because nutrition is a big part of the care of PCOS. And to that end, I have started a company in a telemedicine practice dedicated solely to caring for people with PCOS.
It is so wonderful. You're doing it. And if you could tell a little more for our listeners, some of our listeners are physicians and they're familiar with this, but for listeners who are not, if you can just briefly tell about who PCOS affect and what implications does it have?
Yes. So polycystic ovarian syndrome affects at least 10% of reproductive aged females and people with ovaries. And it used to be believed that it goes away after menopause. It doesn't. So we're talking about anybody who is from menarche and above can be 10% at least are affected by this medical condition. And it is a syndrome that has a very broad presentation, some people more severe than others. It's a hormonal and a metabolic disorder that affects people's ovaries and their menstrual cycles. But it also has many impacts on metabolism. People with PCOS tend to be insulin resistant. They have a lot of dermatologic symptoms as well, facial hair, acne, hair loss, there are higher rates of depression. So it's a full body disorder that many people really associate only with a gynecologic problem or a fertility problem, because it causes irregular menstruation as well. And that's one of the presenting symptoms, but it is actually a full body chronic disease.
And if you could tell a little more about how is it treated and how exactly can nutrition help?
Yes. Well, first, let's talk about the diagnosis. I think that's very important. In adolescence, it can be a little bit murky because sometimes it takes a few years to meet all the criteria for the diagnosis. But if we're talking about somebody who's in late adolescence into adulthood, the diagnosis is made by meeting two out of the three criteria, which we call the Rotterdam criteria. And so number one, somebody has to present with irregular menstruation. So either prolonged menstrual cycle, so a delayed period, or very irregular length of a menstrual cycle. And this is a manifestation of either a delayed or an absent ovulation. So that's one criteria. The second criteria is elevated androgens. So either symptoms like having facial hair and balding and cystic acne and hair in other parts of the body, or having a blood test that's consistent with elevated androgens. So either testosterone or free testosterone or some of the other androgens. And then thirdly, it's having on ultrasound the appearance of polycystic ovaries, which it's a little bit different than what people think. People think, oh yeah, I've had multiple cysts in my life. It's not that. It's that where on the ovary, there are lots of little unruptured follicles. They're very small, but the ovaries are full of them. And so you need two out of those three criteria to meet the diagnosis of PCOS. I don't want to spend too much time on the diagnosis. There are some other updates to that, but that's the basic diagnosis. And what's not part of the diagnosis is the part that I mentioned before, that at least 75% of people with PCOS have insulin resistance. And the insulin resistance affects the endocrine system in many different ways, the hormonal system, and it interferes with ovulation and it impacts the adrenal glands. And so one of the mainstays of treatment of PCOS is treating the insulin resistance. And it may be subtle and people may not even be in the having a hemoglobin A1C that's elevated in the diabetic range yet, or maybe not even in the pre-diabetic range, but that doesn't mean that they don't have insulin resistance. And unfortunately, these people who do have PCOS with insulin resistance, because of the elevated androgens and elevated levels of insulin, they tend to gain weight much more easily. They have difficulty losing weight as well. So nutrition plays a very large role in the management of the insulin resistance. The other, I like to call them drivers, but chronic inflammation, which is a underlying problem for many of our chronic diseases, also plays a role with PCOS here, right? Because we know chronic inflammation can worsen insulin resistance, and it also can worsen the elevated androgen levels. So they all feed back. So we use nutrition to really tackle these two aspects of PCOS. There are not really many things that we can do nutritionally to directly impact the androgen levels, but indirectly by helping the insulin resistance and minimizing the chronic inflammation, we can then help to bring the androgen levels down. So it's a condition that we're managing through. We use many different tools in our toolbox, but nutrition is a big one.
Yes, this is really helpful, especially insulin resistance and chronic inflammation. They drive so many other illnesses, basically affect the entire body.
Right? Non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, cardiovascular disease, certain cancers, neurodegenerative diseases, so many, right? So thankfully we have this knowledge, right? And so we know that there's so many different things that we can help in nutrition by helping in terms of meal planning, how we design our meals, how we time our meals, what's the composition of the meals that help with insulin resistance, right? Making sure that we get enough adequate fiber in each meal, making sure that the meals are balanced so that there's adequate protein and there's some healthy fat, and all of these things will help to manage the insulin resistance. Leveraging other lifestyle methods, right? Like the importance of sleep. Sleep hygiene is incredibly important in PCOS, right? Movement is incredibly important in PCOS. Stress management is incredibly important in PCOS because some people with PCOS have a heightened adrenal response to stressors, and that also will increase their circulating levels of androgens. So a lot of it's nutrition, but there's some other lifestyle medicine tools that we use as well.
Yes, all of this is really helpful. So tell us a little more about how do you help people with PCOS and maybe some examples.
Yeah. So I will start with when a patient makes an appointment with me, my first appointment with them is an hour long. But even before I see them, I ask them to send me all of their lab work because I want to review it and make sure that we have the proper diagnosis. Sometimes maybe there's something that was missed, or you want to make sure that we really are dealing with what we think we're dealing with. And then I like to review all of their labs so that when I need to go and order some additional labs, I want to make sure that there's nothing missing, or maybe there's some things that I want to follow up. So that's where we start, because I don't want to waste my face-to-face time with people reviewing their labs. So I'd rather do it before so we can really utilize, because even an hour is not enough. It's hard to get people to commit to sit down for more than an hour sometimes. People are busy, right? But in the first visit, I take a complete and thorough history, reviewing all the medications, all the supplements. Many people come, they're taking all these different supplements that they recommended. People get a lot of their information on social media. And there's so many people out there, these influencers, talking different supplements, and some of them are legitimate and some of them really, there isn't any basis for them. And people spend a lot of money trying to solve their problems through supplements. So we review all their medications, all their supplements, a complete nutrition history. So I want to know about the quality of their diet. I want to know about a usual day. I want to know about who does the shopping, who does the cooking, who does the food preparation. Like I really want to get the most detail that I possibly can, in addition to just learning about their day, their life cycle. Like, what is the day like for them? What are their sleep habits like? So I really am spending a full hour really just trying to get to know somebody as much as possible and trying to figure out all the different aspects of what might be impacting their PCOS. I take a very detailed menstrual cycle history. Sometimes people don't even realize how much detail goes into, I want to know about their menstrual cycle and what was happening then. And was there a time in their life when it was regular and what was going on then in their life? So we can try for each person to undercover as much as possible, what are their specific triggers? Because each person's PCOS is going to look very different. And so oftentimes they'll see there was a life event, right, that either made a change in their eating habits or a life event that changed their sleep or a life event that was very stressful. During the COVID pandemic, now I'm here in New York, so we went on a very strict lockdown, right? Early in the pandemic, New York went on a very strict lockdown. People were not leaving their homes. And we live in very small spaces in New York with very small kitchens. And I saw people who really barely left their house for months. And many people I diagnosed with PCOS for the first time. And I think so much of it had to do changes in their activity, changes in their eating habits that came as a result of the pandemic. Some people really got into cooking and got really healthy, and other people got really into baking and didn't leave the house, right? And then also changes in people's circadian rhythm. People didn't leave the house. People didn't see daylight, right? Because they weren't going outside. And I still see that today. So sometimes when I have patients who work from home, when you really start talking to them and you discover their sleep, sometimes the nights that they don't sleep well, it's because during the day, maybe they didn't leave the house for the first time until the afternoon, right? Because they don't have to. They get up, they roll out of bed, they go to sit at their desk, and they work for several hours and they don't even see the light of day. So I spend that first hour with them uncovering all of these little details. And then once we've uncovered all these little details, then we'll make a plan together. And oftentimes we may need some additional blood work. We may start medication. We may change medication. We may stop medication. And we may stop supplements, change supplements, and then I'll make nutrition recommendations. But what I never do is I never prescribe a diet. I will say, these are the things that we want to work on. And let's pick a few of them and let's come up with a goal together. So what I choose to do is I choose to set behavioral goals around food and around lifestyle, where maybe there is like an ideal in mind, but you're not going to get from here to the ideal in one visit, right? So we have to make the steps. We have to break it down into those steps and set goals so we can eventually get to that place and reassess after each visit.
I see. And which states do you take patients from?
So I'm licensed in New York and Florida, one other state, but I'm not seeing patients from there yet. And so this year I'm going to look into see what other states I can expand into. But New York and Florida are big states, so those are pretty big populations. But yeah, so right now New York and Florida. And then I have another program that I have, which is a patient course, which is for people who either can't afford to see me or who are not in the state where I practice. And so in this way, they can take the course, which is full of an incredible amount of information. It's 28 days of video lessons, plus their bonus recipes, plus there are worksheets on how to improve their diet quality. There's a shopping list. There's a worksheet on how to complete an elimination diet to see if there are any trigger foods. So all of this is in this program. And then every month, I'll have an office hours so that people can come. And if they're having difficulty understanding something or they want clarity on something that's in the videos, they can come and ask. And then also, I'm going to start having guest lecturers. So the next time we meet, we're going to have a dermatologist come and talk to them about managing some of their dermatologic symptoms. So that's another thing that I offer for people who are unable to see me.
This is very helpful. It's amazing. So people from all over the country could take this course and get valuable information.
And I've even had physicians take the course.
Yes, it's helpful, especially nutrition and this part of training. Many physicians would benefit from additional knowledge. It's wonderful. And tell us a little bit more about supplements. For which supplements there is scientific data that they work or that they do not work?
So there are some that I use actually pretty frequently. There's one that's called inositol. This is actually a small carbohydrate molecule that is very helpful for people with PCOS. It's helpful for the insulin resistance. And there were a few studies published in the last year or two demonstrating non-inferiority to metformin. So metformin, as we know, right, it's a common agent used in people with diabetes and in people with PCOS to help with insulin resistance. So it's been looked at head head-to-head, has a very good safety profile, and it doesn't really have a lot of gastrointestinal side effects that sometimes metformin does. And so sometimes metformin is very effective, but people can't tolerate increased doses. And so they either don't want to increase the dose because they just can't tolerate it. And they can be used together. There's no reason why you can't use them both. They both work in the insulin signaling complex in different ways. And so they can be used together. So I'm a big fan of this supplement. It can be a little bit pricey, right? So unfortunately, the supplements are not covered by insurance. And so people have to pay out of pocket for them. So that's one I use very often. Another one is Omega-3, right? Because omega-3s are very important. It's important. People with PCOS have higher risks of dyslipidemia, but also, as we know, omega-3 is very important for the anti-inflammatory pathways, and most people don't get enough omega-3 in their diet. Other things, certainly when I do any lab evaluation, I'm looking for vitamin D deficiency. I'm looking for other deficiencies. So sometimes we'll supplement with vitamin D. B12 for people who are taking metformin is important because they have higher requirements. I sometimes will recommend zinc because there's some small studies that show zinc supplementation helps with hirsutism and acne. And so that can be helpful as well. So those are some of the more popular ones that I use, and I use those pretty regularly. And there are a few different brands out there that are very good quality control. And so that has been found. And that's really nice to have that alternative. There's a lot of interest right now in the supplement berberine, but I tend to not recommend it. It makes me a little bit nervous because the therapeutic window is so narrow from the amount that's effective to the amount that's potentially liver toxic. And I just don't want people then going out and causing themselves harm, even though it probably is effective for insulin resistance. And I know there's all this talk about like it's nature's Ozempic, like that's what people say. It's not. It's not the same thing. It does maybe help to slightly increase GLP-1 secretion, but I worry about the liver toxicity, so I don't recommend it.
I see. And which supplements, there is data proving that they're not effective? Is it like waste of money?
That's always a harder one, right? Is to say what is not effective. People use saw palmetto. There are different supplements that people use. I'm not an herbalist, so I don't know that there's any that have been proven not effective. Is there just not enough evidence, right? Lack of evidence versus evidence to the contrary. I think it's a tough thing to distinguish, but I try to limit. Like people don't want to be taking a million different vitamins, and some people do, and they'll come just on so many, and it's hard to undo because people get sort of attached to their routine, and it's hard to tell people what's not working. But I think sometimes like people do take saw palmetto, and some people, I think it worsens their androgenic symptoms. Some people like to take ashwagandha for the stress. I don't know how helpful it is specifically for PCOS, but those are common ones that I see people coming to me with. And sometimes people take things that I've never even heard of.
Yes, that's helpful. And nutrition-wise, what would be your top recommendation for people with PCOS, which could work for anyone?
I think, again, it goes back to insulin resistance, right? So I'm not a proponent of any one diet in particular, but that people in each meal, they consume a high fiber carbohydrate. So trying to eat the least refined carbohydrates that they enjoy. So trying to find whole grains that people enjoy, and also including, again, more plant foods always. Getting adequate protein, and that doesn't matter if you eat animal products or not. You can find plant proteins or animal proteins. So making sure that the meals themselves have a composition that provides them with adequate energy, provides them with adequate protein, and makes them feel good that they enjoy. So it has to satisfy all these things. You don't want to be miserable, right? Yes, we need food to survive and we need food for our health, but God gave us taste buds for a reason. I don't know what that reason is, but we have taste buds, right? So we have to also honor them, and we want to honor our cultures, and we want to honor our history and not make ourselves miserable. So I always tell people when you're trying to plan a meal, look for three things. You want to make sure you have a plant, a protein, and a little bit of healthy fat. And that way you're going to have a satisfying meal that provides you with enough energy, that's also going to help with your insulin resistance and give you enough protein to support your lean body mass, which is very, very important. And we're really appreciating how important that is, I think, now as people age to maintain their lean body mass. So a plant, a protein, and a fat.
Yes, it's perfect. Anything else what you would like to add or to recommend?
What I'd like to recommend, I think this is really more not for patients, but for physicians, right? This is my soapbox about PCOS. It has been managed as a bunch of disparate or distinct conditions or symptoms for a long, long time. And we really know that it's a chronic disease, right, that affects a lot of different organ systems. And so we need to manage it as such. We can't just manage the infertility and manage the acne and manage the mood disorder. We really need physicians who are willing to manage it like the chronic disease that it is, so that people can get the long-term health. These are people that have a chronic disease at a relatively young age. And when we don't treat it as such, we are increasing their health risks of so many different diseases. Approximately 50% of people with PCOS will develop type 2 diabetes by age 40. They're at 8 times higher risk of endometrial cancer. They're at higher risk of breast and ovarian cancer. They're at higher risk of cardiovascular disease. I don't know that there's even an equivalent condition in males, right, that we are neglecting. But I do feel like we're neglecting PCOS. That's why I do a lot of physician education too, because I want my OBGYN generalist colleagues and primary care physician colleagues to pay more attention to this and really start managing it like the chronic disease that it is, and not just as these distinct different conditions and just throwing band-aid solutions at people. I think in that we're really doing a disservice.
Oh, yes, it's so important. Thank you so much for coming to this podcast and for sharing your experience.
Thanks for giving me the opportunity to share about something that I feel so passionately about. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And if you can tell again the best way to connect with you for our listeners.
Yes. So you can find me. My website is polyprep.com, PollyPrep.com. And that's where you'll find my patient course. If you want to see me as a patient, it's PollyPrepMD.com. That's for my telemedicine practice. And then on Instagram at PollyPrep. So PollyPrep.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Thank you for listening to my podcast. If you enjoyed it or found it helpful, please subscribe, leave a 5-star review, and share it with a friend. Have any topics you'd like covered? Send me an email at joyfulsuccessliving@gmail.com. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram to connect at joyfulsuccessliving. Have an amazing week. See you next time. The Voices of Women Physicians podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not provide any medical, financial, tax, legal, or psychological services or advice. You are responsible for your own well-being, decisions, and results. Dr. Resnick is a practicing physician, but Voices of Women Physicians podcast is not reflective of the opinion of her employer. You should always contact a professional if you have any specific questions about your unique situation.